And it goes a little something like this.
Get it back live.
About half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill are doing your thing. Are y'all ready to get live or what?
Get it back live.
We gonna set this up right or what? It's Friday night.
That's
we'll
right.
I'm the cream of the crop. All right, to the top.
Well, we'll jump around, and after a two-week hiatus, Aaron William Freeland will be back on the program. Hopefully, you'll be willing to share the wonderful experiences that he had while he was away. I think he will. I truly think he will. Last time I called, I got an answering machine. He might have stayed a little longer at the... at the establishment than he intended. And we know what happens when Aaron stays too long at the establishment. Needs to take a lot more potty breaks. Now, this week has been an interesting week. A highly anticipated baby was finally born. And the baby was named Winnie Rose Fallon. Oh, you thought I meant the other baby. The one that shared, the day before. The royal baby came a day earlier than Jimmy Fallon's baby. In this house, we were happy about the royal baby. We really were. But I think the Fallon baby was more interesting. And the reason it was interesting in this day and age of media attention on media celebrities, it came as a giant surprise to a family full of savvy media people like my children and to myself. I'm not really that media savvy. My wife, who watches breakfast television religiously, so she's in tune with everything media. And somehow the fact that Jimmy Fallon's wife, 8 years his senior, I believe, eight years his senior, gave birth to a five and a half pound baby. It's not a heavy baby. It's on the light side. To compare with, I guess, the 8 pound Prince. It was 8 pounds something. 8 pounds 6 ounces. Now they get my facts straight, if you know what I'm saying. So yeah, birthing was a big deal this week. So a great congratulation, of course, out to the royal family, especially the royal parents. Fine young lad and a wonderful young woman they seem like really nice people, good for them, and we're happy that that young couple now has started their adventure of having a family. Some suggest, you know, will we be seeing them going for a walk outside the palace or wherever it is that they live with the pram going for a walk with the baby? That is, in my mind, doubtful, but possible, but doubtful. Jimmy Fallon, on the other hand, is probably going to teach his kid to play beer pong games early. You know, the baby will get formula and he'll get beer. And they'll have fun, that's for sure. That was the biggest news this week. News that's kind of ho-hum, but still important, is the news that Justin Trudeau, the man running for prime minister on behalf of the Liberal Party, the same party that his father led for decades, one of our greatest prime ministers. And when I say great, I may think he's great or was great. But regardless, his greatness spans time. It may not span what you agree with politically, but still a great prime minister. His son now on the move and has a lot of support, much of it, I assume, and I say I assume, because of the older Trudeau, the previous Trudeau. And I'm not sure this is going to become Trudeau-mania like it did with his father, but I am sure about one thing. He will have an interesting political life. Apparently, he's supporting something, ho-hum, legalizing marijuana. Okay, so we legalize marijuana. How really dastardly is that? I don't know. Some states in the United States have legalized it. It's another way for the government to tax, get in the retail business of marijuana and make some money like they do with Brewers Retail and the Liquor Control Board of Ontario and however the other provinces deal with it. Of course, I speak from my Ontario spirit experience. So, yeah, that's, you know, literally a pot in every home. Truman said, isn't that part of his platform? Or has a pot roast in every home? Well, I don't know, something like that. So it's become a very interesting week, I guess. As I said, Aaron went away. He went to one of those be killed runs where basically it's an obstacle course, not just a race of strict running. It is, there are obstacles in the way. And some of the obstacles are, I find humorous, hoses and stuff like that, watering people down. And I finally got a chance to see Justin Bieber's mom, who wrote a book about her life as a single mother. There aren't people that I admire more than single mothers, simply because, as a father and a parent, I can appreciate how difficult it is to raise children with a partner. I can't imagine how difficult it is to do it without one. So, you know, I understand that as a young child, I'm going to say a young child because she was just a teenager when she gave birth to the Biebs. And she has to be admired. Well, I don't know. If you want to talk about news, the number here is 714-242-5250. You can Skype us as well if you like. If not, I'll give Aaron a call and we'll see if we can excite your Friday night. It is, of course, Candid Frank Live, Friday night free-for-all, feline Friday night free-for-all. We'll touch on the Hamilton Tiger Cats when we get to the sporting side of the program. We'll remind you that the Hamilton Tiger Cats, I don't know where they are right now, but I'm sure they're not holding their heads real high after a 37-0 drubbing at the hands of the highly favored Saskatchewan Roughriders, who may or may not already have won the Grey Cup in many of people's minds, especially those wearing green. Are they a lock to win the Grey Cup? No. by virtue of the way football is played, which is it's not a long drag-out series. It's play well one game and you move on. Play poorly, you stop dead in your tracks. And you don't move on and you wait till next year. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting season, to say the least, in football. In hockey, they're at the point right now where, at least here in Toronto, the cap is being approached. And there are still some key components like Kadri that haven't been signed. The question is, will they sign? Of course, next year, Phaneuf and Kessel become available for signing or available for waiving in the distance. I think one of those won't be here next year. In my opinion, I hope it's Kessel that stays. I do like Kessel, and I like his work ethic, and he's a business kid out there on the ice. He's proven that he's just not just a scorer. He's a playmaker, and he's a hard worker, and he fits into the, I would think, the mold of their coach, Randy Carlyle. The rest of the Canadian cities are making some interesting moves. Montreal getting tougher with Perros. Ottawa. Huh. Imagine that. Losing Alfie. And to Detroit, which has a history of having some really good Swedish players on the team. So in a way, he's going home. And he's not going far because the team that he signed with, the Detroit Red Wings, are moving from the Western Division to, I think they're calling it the Atlantic Division. Not they're calling Eastern or the Atlantic Division. No, the Atlantic Division would be the one with the Rangers are in. Regardless, they'll be playing with Ottawa, Montreal, Boston, the two Floridas. So the division will be interesting. With the two Floridas in it, makes it a real good opportunity for the Leafs again to make the playoffs, may count it 2 years in a row. Their leader, Tim Lewicki, is in the news like crazy. He has made all kinds of decisions that, well, are they alienating decisions? Are they polarizing? I don't know. But I do think they are the kind of decisions that you either like them or you don't. Like taking down all the old pictures of the Leaf teams of the past that won Stanley Cups. Even the phrase, phrases that they had before, he's changing those. And, of course, he has rearranged the front office. The deck chairs have been rearranged. In fact, not just rearranged, some of them have been, some of them have been thrown overboard. So the question now is, do the Toronto Maple Leafs make a move this year better than the one they had last year? When you consider how close they came to making it to the next round, overcoming the eventual Stanley Cup finalists, it gives one hope, if you're a Leaf fan, that the team is a lot closer than maybe it really is. But that's only to be seen in the future. Now, as far as the future is concerned, Dave Nonis, oh, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Oh, boy. Okay, we'll mention that, too. I saw that on here. I was going to ignore the fact because I really don't want to mention how old he is. Dave Nonis had an extension, a five-year extension to his contract, the same limits that Brian Burke had, that the Leafs jettisoned him early by virtue of the lack of success in the first 3 years. And so he's got 5 years to put his stamp on the team, when essentially he really has already had a two-year head start. I don't believe that there was a total difference between Burke and Nonis. I think the difference may be in the way they comport themselves, the way they deal with people, the way they appear on the media, the way they, enter into the media, if you will. Burke kicks the door down. Nonis doesn't even knock. He just waits till the door opens for somebody else, and he slides in. He's a very, private kind of guy. But that's the kind of guy, in my opinion, you need in Toronto. there are too many people who understand the game of the of hockey and understand it over decades, and it's osmosis too. You know, people can talk about how great cities like New York and Boston are when it comes to hockey, which is, you know, they are great cities, you know. But they're nothing like the Canadian cities. Nothing like. Nothing like. And I include every Canadian city in that. The only difference between Toronto and some of the other cities and Montreal and some of the other cities is by the size and the history of the teams, you know. That's what makes Toronto and Montreal special. And I won't play favorites here. I'll just say that they're both very special franchises. One, of course, has had far more success recently than the other. Don't think I have to name names. But neither, really, for the past 20 years, have had any success of real consequence. In fact, no Canadian teams have had any success of real consequence. Yes, both Vancouver and Ottawa made it to the Stanley Cup final. But that's not what you play for. Ask anyone who plays the game, anyone who manages the game, anyone who coaches the game, and most of all, anyone that plays the game. The only thing that matters is winning the Stanley Cup, and that's something no Canadian team has done in 20 years. That's zero Canadian teams. So that, to add that to the futility of the Toronto Maple Leafs over the past half century, and almost half century for that matter, and you have a cocktail of disappointment. And of course, to suggest that Canadian hockey fans aren't disappointed in the way their teams play is just putting your head in the sand, which, of course, the media in this town is very good at doing. The good fortune of being a Toronto sports writer or Toronto TV guy, or whether it be TSN, Sportsnet, or the channels themselves, the other independent channels, there's lots to talk about when it comes to hockey. If the hockey team, the local team, sucks, you can talk about another team maybe in Canada. If the teams in Canada suck, you can always talk about the players that are Canadian playing elsewhere, which to me is, it just doesn't ring true as far as fandom's concerned. It would be nice to cheer for the local team once in a while. Here in Toronto, that opportunity has been few and far between. And as I said, in Canada, it has been 20 years since a team has won the Stanley Cup. And in those 20 years, two teams have made it to the Stanley Cup final, one being Vancouver, losing devastatingly in seven games. I believe Ottawa did too, or did they? Doesn't matter. Point is, they lost. That's all people remember. Now, as far as weather's concerned, we're doing news, sports, and weather. Boy, oh boy, did that heat wave last? I mean, gosh, if you wanted to do anything in the past 2 to 3 weeks, you melted outside. It was horrifying to be outside. And great way to lose weight. And I guess on the entertainment front, my assistant here, otherwise known as my wife, wants me to wish Mick Jagger, Sir Mick Jagger, Sir Mick Jagger, a happy 70th birthday. Yeah. You know, Jagger being 70, I can remember when he was a teenager, which puts me not far behind him. And also, right now I'm feeling a little depressed. So maybe I should play something that'll give me some... here's... you know what? No, let's not. I was gonna play a little Tragically Hip. Oh, let's play a little Tragically Hip, because Jagger right now is almost ahead by a century.
To our thoughts. Hey, here we go.
Yeah, there we do go. How's
How
it going,
you,
Aaron?
Sir?
Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So, share with us the experience. I will interview you. Now, what is the proper term or terminology or name of the event you took place that you participated in that is much like you describe it and you name it for us.
Okay, now there's a couple different events you could be referring to, Frank. One would have been Fan Cup, which was the 13th of July, and the other is the Warrior Dash, which was on the 20th.
Well, let's start with the Warrior Dash.
Okay. Warrior Dash basically is a 5 kilometer, 5.5 kilometer fun run in and around the Horseshoe Valley Ski Resort. Basically, you pays your money, you get a fuzzy hat with horns and a free beer and food and a whole bunch of stuff, and you basically throw yourself at the hill and run around on the hill for the day. It's actually kind of neat. There's a whole bunch of different obstacles that involve barbed wire, fire, logs, water, climbing walls, ropes, cargo nets, all that sort of fun stuff. And the whole idea is to get yourself through it.
I would assume the water came after the fire.
Actually, the water came both before and after.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's even better than what I assumed.
Well, it wasn't like the fire was that big in the first place. You could quite literally step over it, but if you did it at any speed, less than a fast trot, you would probably singe something.
Yes, and maybe Aaron might have come home with a little less hair on his head.
Or other places.
Yeah, I heard you have hairy ankles.
Yep.
Or at least you used to have hairy ankles. So you had fun doing it? Was there a win, place, and show, or was it just make it to the end?
Well, the winning time this year was actually set by a 32-year-old, and it was 26 minutes. So somebody finished this 5-kilometer fun run, plus obstacles, apparently, in 26 minutes. The next time after that was 38 minutes. Myself, I managed to knock half an hour off my time from last year. And
2 days, 3 weeks? I said 2 days, 3 weeks?
Yeah, something like that.
No, how long? I'm kidding.
No, my time last year was an hour and 45. My time this time around was an hour and 15, so I'm very happy about that. Just putting up a quick link here, so you'll have to give me a second. There we go. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Live bands, good music. But I ran into a whole bunch of friends there. Actually, a whole bunch of roadies ran it. Jennifer and Scott Ebbs ran it, and our friend Puck was there as well. So fun was had by all, outdoor cooking. And on the Friday night before all the festivities kicked off, Frank, we had a tornado. So it was a rather eventful weekend, as you can imagine.
So did anybody run into the tornado and see if they could make it through the other side?
Oh, heck no. That was on the Friday. We started running at 7:30 in the morning. It was when they started running people through on the Saturday. So there was actually...
So the night before, when everybody
was
getting ready for the emotional moment of running.
No, it was pretty awesome, let me tell you.
Could you see it, or did you hear about it?
Well, there was one that touched down on Horseshoe Valley Road, which was approximately 15 minutes drive from where we were.
Could you see it visually? Could you see it visually? Was it within eyesight?
No. We didn't actually see the funnel. We didn't actually see anything like that, but everything was blacked out. The rain was coming down sideways, and there was no power, and they told us all to, you know, stay away from the windows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but in the time it took us to get from the food land back to the hotel we were staying at, which was about a 4-minute drive, we paid, left, the power went out, and we came back to a completely dark hotel room. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I bet it was. So the adventure did not only happen at the race. It was actually fun and a memorable experience being there prior to the race.
Oh, all the way around. It was pretty neat.
So what kind of people run in that race? How old, how young?
Well, there's pretty much all ages. The youngest you can be is 14. The oldest you could be is, are you still walking? It's pretty much what it boils down to.
Okay.
I think the oldest competitors this year was 72. So that was pretty cool.
All right, and so you start the race. You said there was barbed wire. What did you find most difficult? What part of the race gave you the most trouble?
The part of the race that gave me the first trouble was actually within the first half a kilometer of opening, because they ran us up the side of the mountain right off the top. Like, you take off from the starting line, there's a little flat patch for about 200 meters, and then you go right up one of the runs. So that was... And then right at the top of that run, they stick in an obstacle for you to climb over. And it's one of those ones that has alternating fences and barbed wire. So you jump over the fence, roll under the barbed wire, jump over the next fence, roll under the barbed wire, and away you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun. Now, I didn't have you in mute, but I have figured out, which wasn't much to figure out, really. I like the idea of listening to the phone ring so they know if somebody's on the other end, because it solves the embarrassment of picking up the line and then getting an answering machine like I did the first time I called you.
But yes. That
was off the air. That was off the air, so we're good.
I did have you on mute
when I called you.
The oldest competitor this year was an 85-year-old gentleman who finished in a time of 1 hour and 58 minutes.
Good for him.
Yeah, 85 years old.
Good for him, man. You know, there are some very healthy octogenarians out there.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Even septuagenarians. Now, are they called nanogenarians, the ones that are 90?
I have no idea.
Because nano would be something else, too, wouldn't it?
It would be very, very small.
Yeah, so I guess you enjoyed the run. Good food, good company.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It sounds like you had good company, and it sounds like a real wonderful experience, and it was well worth the visit to the Horseshoe Valley.
Oh, most definitely. I recommend everybody try it at least once.
Once a year? Is that how often this thing's run, or is it a summer thing?
It's run every summer, usually in and around the third week in July. It's put on by a company called Red Frog Events. They put on a really good spread. It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, I heartily recommend it if you don't mind a little bit of pain.
And you're not saying heartily with a D. You're saying heartily with a T.
Yes, heartily. Heartily recommend it.
Exactly. So I'm glad you had a good time. We missed you over here. I took a vacation the first week, decided not to do the show. Wasn't feeling well either. Had a bit of an illness, and I decided I just wasn't well enough to do it. I was kind of glad you weren't.
Front yard remodel, weren't you?
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, that was doing that. That's part of the reason why I didn't feel so good, because I was working in that heat wave.
Oh,
I was working in that heat wave, and this is not an insult to my family at all. While I was working out there, they couldn't stand just standing there watching me work. And you know what? It had to get done.
Did they pitch in, or did they just...
Oh, no, definitely. Of course they pitched in. Of course they pitched in. They're my family. Families work together, don't they?
Usually.
And the usually part indicates that not all the time that happens. So in this case, yes, they helped. But
cool.
The point is, it was, and they'll tell you, it was tough just to stand around. And never mind actually do stuff. You sweated bullets just standing there. So yeah, it was
that I do not doubt. It has been a bit of a surprise these past few weeks.
Well, we're back to normal. We're back to the 20s, 22, 19. A little cold, but you know, it is August after all. Where has the summer gone? Where has it gone?
Here's something interesting for you, Frank. I don't know if you heard about this, but Siberia actually experienced a record-setting temperature today. They went all the way up to 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Siberia.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Known for the cold.
You know, I mean, it's like, I'm sitting there reading this going, that's not right. It's not supposed to be that warm in Siberia.
Well, not if that's where you want to send people to make them suffer.
Exactly.
Right? I mean...
The gulags are new vacation spot.
Yeah, no kidding. So, what do you think of this... Well, wait, we're not finished with your fun experiences. So, what do you think of the experience going to Rochester, playing your fan cup? Tell us about that, your personal lacrosse experience.
Sure. Fan cup is incredible. It is one of the most awesome experiences you can have. Started originally actually in Toronto back in 2002. There were a whole bunch of rock fans. We all got together and decided we'd get floor time and, just hack around because we really love the game. So we figured, why not? We can play it. It's not that hard. And, started tossing around the ball. And afterwards, we'd sit down at the – this is a little plug for a local bar. So we used to sit down at the Fox and the Fiddle out by Square One. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
So we used to sit down there and have a few brown pops after the games were over. And we got to thinking, hey, why don't we invite our friends from Rochester up and we can play them in a game? Maybe raise a little money for charity, have a little like a little silent side auction, that sort of thing. So we set it all up. Not the best time to do it. We did it mid-August. So, And we figured, well, let's go for the gusto. We'll play 3 20-minute stop time periods. Just like the pros. That's the last time we ever did that.
Did you react like the pros?
No, we were dragging by the end of it. It was awesome. But this is something that that I've been trying to do every single year that I've had the opportunity to. It's now when it's going into its 13th year. We've raised over $60,000, and it's a really great chance to see friends that I haven't seen in a while and touch base with fans from Philly and Boston and Rochester and Buffalo, Minnesota, Chicago. Even though Chicago doesn't have a team, I actually kind of find it kind of funny. Their fan cup team has lasted for twice as long as the original team, which is pretty cool. I think
which says something
the
about
only the, sports league in the world that has its own tournament set up, created, played for by the fans to raise money. I can't think of any other league in the world that's got something like that going on right now. So we've got that going for us too.
Just so we're clear, raise money for
different charities every year. For example, this year we were raising money for Tyler Kopp, who was a kid that passed away last year. We were also raising money on the side for a lacrosse player in Rochester who passed away after a tree fell on his car. So it's, we do things for families. We've done things for the Canadian Cancer Society. That's usually what we do whenever it's up here in Canada. Rhonda's Place down in Buffalo, a whole bunch of other different charities that we raise funds for, that we've raised funds for over the years.
Well, congratulations on the fine work, and all of the participants should be congratulated and thanked for the fun and raising of money for people who could use the help.
Exactly.
You guys did a great job. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Okay, now I'm going to give a shot here. I think I told him I'd call him on Friday. But I see here I might have told him or Monday. I said Friday or Monday, but we'll give him a shot. We'll call. We'll see what happens. We'll see if we hook up with him. Oh no, was not answered. Okay, so maybe we'll try one more time. We'll see what happens. Try one more time. It's a surprise guest.
Hell, don't spoil it for me. I'm all
single. It ain't happening. It ain't happening today. All right. So, no, it ain't happening today. I'm checking to see that I have the right number, and no, it's not happening today, and I'm not going to tell you who it was because it doesn't matter right now. All right, so at the top of the show, it's Free for All Friday. Were you aware of the game that Hamilton had this week?
The shutout loss?
Yeah.
I read about it in the papers.
Have you heard from Jarrett lately?
I have not.
I'm worried that they had to scrape him off a sidewalk somewhere.
I know he and Nat just got hot water back. So
yeah, they're having problems as well with the flood.
Yeah, but I hadn't heard anything from Jer about that. So I'm thinking he's probably just licking his wounds because that's kind of embarrassing.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Is all I can say is wow.
Yeah.
You know, during the exhibition season, they lambasted Winnipeg in the same kind of manner, a sort of reversal of fortune. It was a pretty sad thing. But you know what? These are the kinds of games that build character. As you know, it's just unfortunate if you play like this in your first playoff game of the season and end up turfed like the Toronto Rock were. They weren't lambasted. They didn't get a zero, but they did the next best thing. They played poorly. And it doesn't sit well with the fans. But the good news is, just like the Toronto Rock, I think the Hamilton team and their fans have good fortune in front of them. I think they're in a rebuilding process. The reality is that every rebuild doesn't happen instantaneously. It requires some time and some parts being, moved in, parts being brought in. And then those parts being synchronized in a manner that leads to success. And right now, they just don't have it, as the Rock didn't have it in their game. So, yeah, Hamilton will look better. They've picked up an ex-Argo. I mean, he was only an ex-Argo for less than 12 hours, and they picked him up. Things are changing in Hamilton, and things are changing for the Toronto Rock as well, aren't they?
They are, most definitely. The thing that I find most interesting about the Tiger Cats is they've had issues. They don't seem to have consistency when it comes to a defensive line. Their defense seems to be constantly shifting and changing. It doesn't seem like there's any. I mean, at one point their defense was sucking, but their offense was awesome. Then their offense started sucking, and the defense just didn't pick it up. I mean, losing to Saskatchewan 37-0 is just bad.
Although, with the way that team is playing this year, you can't really, as a closet Hamilton Ticat fan, I can say this. The team has great supporters. The team is playing out of town. The fans have a long way to go to watch their team play, and it's not a very tempting situation. So, it's not the kind of year, it isn't a perfect storm because it isn't a perfect storm, but it is a storm nonetheless. They got a lot going against them this year. So this will be a real character builder for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, I believe.
Oh, most definitely. No, this is one where they'll get to prove themselves.
Yep, and they will yield the fruit of this terrible year next year for sure, I'm sure. So the Rock are making changes. Lacrosse is still being played. The OLA is underway and moving along. And how are they doing?
Well, we're getting into the short strokes, as it were, now for the OLA. The Senior A, or what's called Major Series Lacrosse, is getting down to the final games of the season. That's always fun because we're getting into the silly season known as playoffs. What I've always found really interesting about Major Series Lacrosse and about the OLA and WLA in general, is the fact that, technically speaking, you can play more games in the playoffs than you would play during the regular season. Because there's 16 or 18 games in the regular season, but you can potentially play up to 28 games in the playoffs before you win the cup. So that's, it almost seems like the season, and this is a common complaint, that the season isn't worth playing because it really doesn't mean anything. You know, I mean, all these games that you go, the 16 games that you play, really doesn't make a difference because it all boils down to the 28 games at the end. I guess it's really technically only for seeding.
And you know what? The playoffs are always interesting in every sport, right?
This is true.
And they make it possible for good seasons to be had.
Most definitely.
Let's see if we got our buddy Chris Shivcharin on. Chris, are you there? Chris? Oh, I guess not. He's not there. Anyway, so it's been an interesting week or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in your mind in the past couple of weeks that deserves mention and topical discussion?
Oh, topical discussion. This is always fun. I'm going to go south of the border for a bit. Wendy Davis.
How far south? Going to Tijuana? To Texas. Let me guess what he's going to talk about.
Well, you did hear about Wendy Davis's filibuster, yeah?
Mm-hmm. With her running
and
shoes?
How they turned around and rammed it through the next week.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's that. There were a couple of plane crashes. There was the one with Asiana Airlines, and there was another one of Flight 345 crash landing in New York.
Yep.
So, you know, hey, go FTA.
Well, you know, and it's been a horrible couple of weeks of train crashes as well around the world.
That's true. You had Lac-Megantic. You had one.
The one in Spain that they were going twice the legal speed.
There was one in China.
Yep. One in Quebec.
Yep. I mean, this is just, I don't know what it is, but all of a sudden it's all of the stupidity is coming to a head.
Well, I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna sound like in the U.S. a Democrat, in Canada as a liberal, but deregulation to me is a problem. The less you regulate people, there has to be a happy balance, you know, where rules are enforced and common sense is acted on. And I worry sometimes with deregulation by itself, you know, the word itself scares me, you know. I mean, I like to be regular because when I'm not regular, I go to the store looking for something to help make me regular.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't want to get bound up. And I think that's the issue that a lot of people are going to find in the States. If you decide that you're going to deregulate, that's like bombing for peace. It doesn't work.
Well, you know, and that's the scary part for me. I've become a very... I've lost a lot of faith in our system. I've lost a lot of faith in our police. I've lost a lot of faith in justice. My personal experience is that the truth really doesn't matter when it comes to the police. The truth doesn't really matter when it comes to the legal system. It's all a game, and whoever plays the game better wins. And to me, that's sad. It truly is sad. And that's what I feel like sometimes. That's how I feel. You know, where the truth is something that is a waste of time to discuss because it's meaningless. And searching for the truth, the system doesn't care about searching for the truth. It would prefer to just figure out what's easiest, the easiest solution or the easiest arrival of fact that they feel is there. And I find that extremely sad. You know, we lack character. As a community, we're lacking more and more character, and it's sad, you know. And we expect more from our politicians and more from our legal system, more from each other in general, and we seem to be getting less, you know. And I don't know why I feel that way, but I do feel that way at this time. I don't know how you feel about, you know, the way justice works and the way innocent people are treated, the way guilty people are treated. But it seems kind of just, to me, it just doesn't seem like the truth really matters.
I've got a few opinions on that sort of thing. I'm disappointed, but at the same time, the results are not entirely unexpected. I mean, when you look at the Trayvon,
but are they acceptable?
When you look at Mueller, when you look at Melinda Drapik, Critton, when you look at James Holmes, when you look at everything that's happening south of the border, we in Canada we're blessed. We don't seem to have that high of a crime rate. And I know there are going to be people out there that say, oh, no, when you compare the statistics, Canada is much worse, and it's because we record crime differently than the states. See, for example, just as a way that crime's recorded in Canada, we have something called a Class 1 felony. What that is, or a Class 1 assault. What that is if I yell at you and it hurts your feelings, that's considered a Class 1 assault. It's an assault that does not cause bodily or physical harm. So any domestic dispute is included in our crime statistics, but it's not included in American crime statistics. And this is where you get a disparity.
Well, even gunshots are included in...
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, we have fewer of those, I thank
God.
Well,
a kid was killed. I know people tried making a racial thing, tried making it a, you know, but at the end of the day, America has a thing where stand your ground in a lot of states is scary to a lot of visible minorities.
Well, this whole thing, what this reminds me of, and I know it's going to sound like I'm trying to totally make light of it, but it sounds like Uncle Jimbo taking the kids hunting in South Park out of season. And anytime he wants to shoot something, before he does, he yells, oh, my God, it's coming right for us. And then he blows it away. And
yeah, it's in my opinion, and let me say, and I don't mean it sarcastically, in my humble opinion, it's one thing to stand your ground on your property or in your home.
It's another to follow somebody in your car, take your gun out of your car, start a confrontation with that individual. And then when the tables turn, go, oh, my God, it's coming right for us, and smoke the person. This Zimmerman basically gave himself an out. And then 3 days later, you heard about the family he, quote-unquote, rescued from an SUV?
No,
did
I didn't hear
about
that
one?
No.
There was a vehicular accident on the interstate, and the vehicle was on fire. And there were 4 people in it. And one of the responding officers happened to be a friend of George Zimmerman. So we called George, said, hey, come out here with a fire extinguisher. You can be a hero and get your name back in the good books. Zimmerman showed up. The fire was already out. The people were already out of the SUV. He showed up, stood around for a few minutes with his fire extinguisher, and then left. And it gets reported in the paper. And by some media outlets, says, oh, George Zimmerman's a hero. He saved a family from a burning SUV. And then they tried to get the family to do a press conference to thank George Zimmerman, and the family's like, no.
He didn't do any such thing.
No. We don't want to be associated with him.
Well, you know, like I said, and I repeat, and it's not just about Canada, and it's not just about the U.S. It's about justice in general is something that is very elusive, more elusive today than it ever has been in my mind. Sadly, I have to say that, unfortunately, I must be living with rose-colored glasses because justice has never been something that has lived. The story about the Aboriginal kids that were used for testing, they tested food on them and tested them.
Yeah.
Some would suggest in a manner that was less, more Nazi-ish than it was anything else, as horrible as that sounds.
Purpose, they were basically the bunny rabbits for cosmetics testing.
And that's horrifying. And it really is sad. The older I get, and the more experienced I become, and the more I learn about stuff, how truly rotten we are as a society, at least those of us that are in the position where they can abuse the system and abuse people with a license to do so based on them being, you know, part of the politics, you know, or part of the, you know, the existing powers that be. You know, I shake my head at it because I guess, I don't know, you're much younger than I am, and you'll remember this better than I. But I seem to recall when I was a young kid that I felt that justice was an important thing, that, you know, I'm a proud Canadian. I'm proud of the stuff we do. We're so wonderful. We fought wars against, you know, dictators and fascists and the like. And then you get older and find out that some of the crap that your people were doing was pretty low. And I find that very disheartening.
No, I can't disagree with you there. I think as we get older, we tend to get more jaded because we have certain ideas of what we believe to be right and what we believe to be wrong. And when the reality, based on codified laws and stuff written down in books, doesn't match up with our expectations, we tend to get very disappointed with that.
And feel stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, really. You know, I mean,
I feel stupid.
According to the law in Florida, what George Zimmerman did was not a crime. He had
According to the way the law was
written in Florida,
judged,
yeah.
According to how the law was judged that day, one would hope that anything beyond what he did would be criminal. One would hope. But you know what? Unfortunately, you know, it comes down to perception. And unfortunately, that is the weakness of our society. As a society, our biggest weakness is we really don't know what it's like to walk in some people's shoes. So our perception of the way the law should be distributed or, you know, acted on may have a different motivation than others, you know. And that's what's happening in the U.S., you know, the way they describe the court case and the, you know, the one only thing that I will agree with, not the only thing, one of the only things that I agree with, or one of the things I agree with, was the way the juror, I forget the number of the juror, but the one that was on CNN, she referred to him by name, George Zimmerman.
And she called Trayvon Martin the boy.
The boy, yes.
Yeah.
Which, if you're American, you'll understand how insulting that is if you're black. Being called a boy is a very insulting way to refer to a black person. Very insulting.
Nope.
And I'm not saying she did it on purpose or it with intention, but she did it with, you know, society's, you know, it's just the way people talk, right? And the way people talk about people who aren't around, so you don't really know how bothersome it is to them. You know, and that's what I mean when I say, you know, I'm referring to the ignorance that we have of other people. You know, it's something that we do. I know that you're a person of interesting background. When I grew up, I'm Italian. We were treated like you heard about black people being treated. You know, it doesn't feel good when the police come with billy sticks and you're 8 years old and they're swinging them at you and your parents and or you and your family. Trust me, it doesn't feel good. And the reason they're doing it is because you're having a coffee outside a coffee house, because in Canada, or in Toronto at least, they didn't understand that people stood outside talking about a soccer game after a soccer game having a coffee and felt that loitering was illegal, which was true. And they felt that they had the right, the police felt they had the right to use force to disperse the crowd. And some in the crowd, like myself, were 8 years old. And I had for the longest time in my life a fear of policemen because of it.
I'll be honest with you. Well,
it's the reality of life, my friend. It's the reality of life. You don't know what you do and how it affects somebody if you don't understand what it's like to walk in their shoes. It's that simple. It's not complicated. So, yeah. So, have I forgiven the police for it? Not 100%, and I never will. Because I saw something I never want to see again, and I will not give that an opportunity ever again. So sometimes I'm a little abrasive when I run into police officers for that reason, because I truly believe that that at one time I felt as though they were bullies with a badge. And that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. It truly is unfortunate. But you know what? That doesn't mean I give up on justice and, you know, respect for the system. You know, you can't give up on a system. You know, there are good systems and bad systems in the world. And I think we're in one of the better ones. So we're in a position where we don't need to, you know, destroy it and start over. We're in a position where we can fine tune it. And I think that's what the system should allow to happen from its people and its citizens. Mm-hmm. The opportunity for the system to reflect the people more and more each year, you know, that there be progress. Other news, you know, aside from the derailing trains and the plane crashes and the weather being something that has been really an interesting thing, I got to say the weather has truly, truly been interesting. We also, Mick Jagger turned 70 today.
Yep.
What do you think of that one?
You know what? How many people actually thought he'd be around?
How many people thought he'd actually be around doing anything?
Yeah, no. I mean, that's the really cool part. I mean, they've been making music for 50 years now. This is their 50th anniversary tour. How cool is that?
It's amazing.
One of those things where you think to yourself, man, if I had that kind of staying power, I'd be awesome. Interesting fact, a lot of people think that, you know, musicians are going to live forever or they're going to die young. Did you realize that the average age for a musician, if you can get past this age, you're pretty much golden. It's the age of 27. When you think about the musicians who died when they were 27 years old, Hendrix.
Uh-huh. Joplin.
Amy Winehouse.
Morrison.
Yeah. All of these people. There's actually a spike around the time that the people turn 27. So Bieber's got, what, 7 years?
Well, I hope he lives a little longer because I want him to look back at his musical career. Hey, Mike, how's it going, buddy?
Doing
when
good,
you really,
gentlemen.
When you really
you
think
tonight?
About it, I'm just going to see if I can find, because there was a list that I had of people that had passed away at the age of 27. I'm going to see if I can find that again.
There are a lot of them. Mike, welcome to the program.
Frank, how you doing, man?
Good, my man.
Did you, I'm guessing you probably didn't watch the game tonight.
No, I didn't watch the game tonight.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything. It wasn't worth it.
Well, you know what? Calgary was destined to win. Edmonton was destined to lose. And
yep.
It eventually worked out that way, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to watch it later, but you know what? After what you just said, I don't think I will now.
Yeah, it really... The first quarter was interesting, and then after that, Winnipeg just completely flatlined, and that was it. So...
Give us a plug for your page, your blog.
True CFL fan .blogspot.com. But
see, I gotta write that down so that I can say it.
Okay.
Say it again one more time.
True CFL fan .blogspot.com.
That's right. And Mike is our one of our friends of the show that offers us such great insights into the game of football. Listen, we'll talk about football in a second. What inspires you? Do you think other than football? Do you have any thoughts about life in general? In the past couple of weeks, Fridays we try and broaden our horizons. Mike, what's gone on in the past week that interests you or piques your interest?
Well, that's kind of why I was calling in. I know today's, like you said, is the kind of the open freeline topic show. So I wanted to throw something out there for both of you, and you could just share your opinions on it. Like, do either one of you believe in God at all? Or would you consider yourself?
I do.
Okay. So would you consider yourself, like, a Christian, or do you, you know, like, are you just agnostic? What would your position
No, I define myself as I believe that there's a God, and he had a son, and his son sacrificed his life for us.
Okay.
And I believe also that that the intentions of, and this is the part that's going to be hard to take for churches and such, I believe that there are some of the actions of churches are misguided, but that doesn't change the fact that God exists in my mind. Whether he really exists for real, I'm not here to argue about that. He just exists in my mind, and he doesn't have to exist in your mind. That's
okay,
your
so,
decision.
Okay,
I'm a Christian.
I mean, yeah, I'm a Christian as well, but I just found, like, what your position kind of interesting. Like, at the end, you said that you believe in your mind, but it's okay for someone else if they didn't. Like, so you believe it's subjective.
Absolutely, it's subjective.
Okay.
You know, it's a personal thing.
Right.
I don't believe in imposing my will on anyone about anything.
Right,
I believe
right.
we should have a conversation. I believe that we can arrive at a mutually agreeable, you know, decision, if you will.
Okay.
But I don't believe in the imposition of one's will on another. I think that's wrong. Because what that
right.
does is that makes room for people who are racist, who are biased, and who are politically unilateral.
Right.
And I don't believe in those kinds of people. I'm a facilitator. I'm a believer in that we should work together as people, regardless of race, color, or creed.
Okay.
So that's why I say what I say. You know, I can believe in God, and you can believe in Allah, and we both can believe that both those people or beings believe that we should live together, and that's what they'd want for us. That's what I believe.
Okay,
I don't believe...
Go
ahead.
No, I agree with everything you said there. Absolutely.
You don't have to, and I truly mean you don't have to agree with me. It's just how I feel, and it's my own personal business.
Right.
One that I don't
really
advocate.
The way I was framing the question was more in regards to when you believe it's subjective. I know on a personal note, I understand and I agree on that. What I was trying to infer to was, do you believe in like that's actually a reality? And what I mean by there's, you know, a lot of Christians, and I know many that have this belief system that say many different roads all lead to God, like the Muslim, the Jew,
yeah.
the Hindu, the Buddhist.
Absolutely,
all
for sure.
are going to the same place. You believe that?
For sure. For sure. There is no one road to heaven or one road to, you know, paradise. I really don't believe there is one road to paradise. I believe that You know, just the same way I can be in Canada and find a road to heaven, so can somebody who's in Africa, India, or you know, in the Arab states. It doesn't matter. In China, in Russia, you know, what makes us ready for heaven is trying to make a heaven on earth. And the problem I have with people in general is there are too many people in this world try making hell on earth. Okay? That's my beef. All right? My thing is I believe that we have an obligation as human beings. We're not animals. We have opposable thumbs. We have the ability to think. We have the ability that I believe God gave us to make a decision on whether to do right or whether to do wrong. We all suffer temptation. We all believe we have the answer. But more importantly for me, it's about me making my little world better and not depend on somebody else to make their world better for me.
So, Frank,
I'll do it on my own.
Are you Catholic by any chance?
Yeah, I am. Well, that's how I was raised. I question sometimes whether I'm Catholic or not.
Right. No, because I noticed that, like, a lot of Catholics, and especially since, I think, John Paul II, they've really embraced the whole ecumenical movement of saying that all roads lead to God. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, the position
yeah,
that you
yeah,
just... Shared that.
Yeah, but that's something I've believed all my life. You know,
but like
I was raised by nuns.
Like
I went raised.
But
like Catholic
that,
religion. Go ahead.
But the thing that so we're both Christian. Like I'm you're Catholic, I'm Protestant. So there's certain things we probably disagree on. But the one thing we'd agree on are the actual words of Jesus that we find in the Bible. And the thing I find interesting is if you're any other religion, this is if you're Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, Buddhist, you know, you can name whatever, even if you're an agnostic, it's all the same. With all those other belief systems, they have room for that idea to say that other people can go to heaven. Like in the Quran, it talks about people who may not believe in Allah but live a righteous life can still be granted to paradise. It even says Christians will be in heaven for their faith in Jesus. It states that in the Quran. Jews have a similar belief system where there's unbelievers who, well, they may not embrace the, you know, Jehovah of the Bible, but as long as they live a righteous life, they'll still be granted into the world to come. And you
or
see
the
this
Torah.
Across the board, yeah. Yeah. You see this across the board in almost every belief system. But when it comes to Christianity, there's no room for that. And the reason for that, and I'm sure you know this more than even just as well as I do, is that Jesus came and died on a cross. What that signified was, and this is why Jesus made the statement, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me, which is him laying his life down was to say that the only way we could make it to heaven, because none of us are capable on our own standing. Because, I mean, if you look at the Sermon on the Mount, and this is in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, where Jesus lays out what is God's standard, what God considers good and what God considers evil. When you see that, there is no human being on the face of this earth right now that could honestly say to themselves they meet that standard. You take the Ten Commandments, right? And he talks mm-hmm. about do not commit adultery. We all heard of that, right? That's,
yes.
To a degree, a lot of people can keep that. You know, there's some people who can't, some people that can. But Jesus pointed out something. He said that, you know, you have heard it written said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you that whoever looks upon a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Then you take another commandment, do not commit
murder.
Okay, right?
you're talking about the Jimmy Carter principle.
Well,
I have sinned with my I have sinned in my mind. You know,
we're talking about Jesus is like what Jesus was showing was at the time in the Jewish culture when he, and this is the first century, when he's there, there was the Pharisees and what we have the Sadducees, right? And these men were imposing onto their culture at the time their interpretation of the Torah, of the commandments from God.
Mm-hmm.
So on that Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus was doing was he was telling them, this is what God's interpretation of these commandments are. This is what the spirit behind the commands are, you know, the intention behind them. And he said,
right, and
that's why we take the commandment, do not murder. Jesus said, though, if you hate your brother without cause, you've already committed murder in your heart. Now, what that does is that automatically, you know, I don't know anyone. I mean, everyone has to be honest with themselves. But anyone who thinks that they can meet that standard on their own, that can qualify to something like that, not to mention the other things Jesus talked about, like turning the other cheek, or when someone comes to take your jacket, give them your shirt as well, or if someone forces you to walk a mile, go another mile, you know, like, it's, you know, there's very few people that can honestly say to themselves they can live that out. And that's why Jesus then had to die on the cross, because he said he understood the dilemma that no one could meet that standard. So how does God resolve the issue of his justice and his standard of holiness along with his love and mercy that he has? And that's where the cross of Christ comes in.
So you're making the trip from the Old Testament to the New Testament.
No, because it's all from one source.
Yeah, but it's, you know, this is tough. Talking religion is tough. You know, it's all about belief and acting on your beliefs. No matter how you look at it, everyone has a standard they want to achieve, but very few, you know, meet it. Even the demands that they claim to be making on themselves.
Right.
Which is why the community of the church sometimes is a failure. Some people don't go to church, and the reason they give for not going to church is they believe this truthfully in their hearts. I know they believe it, and I believe them when they say it. I don't go to church because I believe a lot of hypocrites go to church, and I don't want their company.
Well, that's true.
Right?
And again, we're not called in the Bible to go to church. Church attendance means nothing in God's eyes. It means absolutely nothing. You can never go to church your entire life, and it would change nothing with your standing with God. Like you said, there's many people who go to church every Sunday, but Monday through Saturday live as if they've never been to a church in their entire lives, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, this will comes back to what Jesus actually said. And when he
I get that you want to talk about Jesus and stuff, and I would love to talk about Jesus, but here's my problem with talking about Jesus. When we talk about Jesus, we are assuming we're speaking for him, and I get really nervous about that. What I will say is this, is that in my opinion, I want to make sure you understand this.
Okay.
I do not speak for Jesus. I do not understand what Jesus meant or wanted, because all I can do is assume from what I believe were his intentions. Primarily, like you said, dying on the cross was to get us forgiven of original sin, giving us an opportunity to live our lives anew by his sacrifice. And everything else, as far as, you know, the Ten Commandments and all that, that's all stuff obvious. You're right. And I agree with you the rest of the way. Just that I really don't like and I don't feel comfortable speaking for Jesus, which fits into my idea of accepting all faith. I'm not going to disagree with you, Mike, for a second about what you're saying, because I think you believe it and I think you're being sincere about it, and I must respect that. But as far as I'm concerned, Jesus, as far as I know, one of the things that he did was he got upset because in church they were selling stuff in the church which he felt wasn't the idea that the church
right.
was for. And it was one of the only times on record, at least in the religious record, which is the Bible, that Jesus lost his temper. So
yeah.
Take that as an example. If true, if that really happened, what's the message there? Well, the message is that the church is not all correct. And by the church, I mean the building and the people
right.
that operate that building. So there's room for doubt, you know, as a Catholic. There are things that happen within the church that I don't find acceptable, which is hard
yeah.
for the church, and I'm probably speaking sacrilege by saying that right now. But unfortunately, it's the truth. And I judge to answer your question, I hope I'm answering it anyway,
yeah.
I believe there's right and wrong, there's good and bad, and I believe that I will do both. The question is, do I feel saddened by my weakness? Do I feel repentant? Do I care about making less mistakes? That's what I believe in. You know,
right.
I am not I am a sinner. Look at me. I am a sinner. But I believe in karma, and I believe, I call it karma because people understand when you say karma better than they do what you reap is what you sow.
Yeah.
You know, the Christian terminology is reap what you sow. You know, but karma is a nice, easy adjective or whatever that describes what I think is my ultimate reward that I perpetuate.
Okay.
That's all. And that's what I believe about religion. Religion is self-perpetuating future based on your history. And there are people in this world who are rotten, and they walk beside us every day. And the temptation is to fight with them, to try to beat them. And all you hope for is those around you that you love and care about you will help you to understand that beating them at their own game won't make you better. So I do believe in...
Do you have any... Based on that earlier comment, do you have any questions about, like, the veracity of the actual Bible itself, particularly
always.
The four Gospels?
Always. Always. There's always questions. There's always... The more you read the Bible, and the more you read the Bible and hear about the Bible, the more there are statements that can be considered contrary to each other. So
okay.
now you have
for
to
example,
figure out what makes
for
sense.
Example, like what, for example? Because I hear that I deal with atheists all the time who try to make claims against the Bible or against Christ and try to say, but they always throw that statement out, but they never have an example.
Let me say it a different way. In my opinion, the Bible isn't always consistent. It does do some zigging, some zagging, which causes you to want or needs you to believe more. You know, because I'm sorry, but you know, I just find that. Sometimes people who quote the Bible quote it sometimes only for the benefit of the message they're trying to send. That's my opinion.
Okay.
That's all.
Well, yeah,
you know,
I mean,
it's not so much that the Bible's contradictory, but the people who do the interpreting sometimes when they talk, it sounds to me contradictory. It sounds to me. Can I tell
right.
you for sure which passage and that? At this moment, no, I can't. You got me there. I can't tell you at this moment. Hey,
okay.
Aaron, do you want to jump in on this one or what?
I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole.
What?
I'll be honest with you. I have some very contrary opinions when it comes to religion and when it comes to the Bible. I am a lapsed Anglican. I was a Wiccan. I am now a practicing Kemetic Orthodox member. So I dabbled in a few other faiths. Buddhism was on the radar for a while there. I have a different take on the Bible. Of course, Michael, I respect your opinion. Frank, I respect yours. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion about God and how they believe that the universe and faith works. Mine tends to make people uncomfortable.
What? Why would you say it would make us uncomfortable?
I'm not a big fan of the Christian faith.
Well, now I'm uncomfortable.
Could you tell us why? Like, could you name reasons what makes you uncomfortable about Christ?
It's not necessarily Christ that I'm uncomfortable with. It's his servants and his followers and his believers, those that claim to follow his path.
Right.
Because very frequently their actions do not match up with the rules that he has laid out for good Christians to follow. I'm uncomfortable with Christians who believe in the clobber passages of the Bible to try to deny people rights. I am uncomfortable with the idea of instituting laws for prayer in government-funded institutions in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution. I am...
Whoa, time out. Are you a U.S. citizen?
No, I'm not a U.S. citizen, but I have lots of friends who are.
Okay, let me just, because, again, that comes up again. I agree with everything you said up to then. There's the history of the Christian church has been a ton of hypocrisy, crusades, inquisitions. You could go on and
yep.
on, right? But the thing that you just said there at the end, this is a big, because I'm an American, and we deal with this problem all the time. And we have atheists throw that out there all the time, that's stating that the Constitution somehow is supposed to remove any form of religious, whatever, in the government, in the public square. This is a big issue we've been having.
Well, under Article 6 of the First Amendment of the Constitution, it states that there shall be no religious test to hold public office.
Yeah, that's okay. That refers to
someone's
personal
belief. So that means that regardless of whether
belief,
you're a Muslim, a Zoroastrian, a fan of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, a Rastafarian, a Jew, a Mormon, whatever,
absolutely.
Doesn't make a difference. You're perfect.
Yeah, because we have freedom
of
religion here. That part we get, right?
Yeah.
The thing with what atheists and secular people I see do with that is they take it that and they run with it to a whole other level. And what I mean by that is they forget the very reason America and Canada, for example, have the type of governments that they do, the type of freedoms that we have here, comes straight from the Christian influence. Nothing else. This is something people completely forget. The very fact that we have the liberties that we do is a byproduct of people who looked at the Bible, looked at what Christ taught, and tried to implement a government and society that would be most closest to that in the most practical way possible. This is some people.
The exclusion clause that's in the First Amendment.
Okay.
Congress shall make no law concerning the establishment of religion, which means that they are in effect to be unbiased.
Yeah. Let's put this all into context.
And this is where a lot of
people go.
And if you hear me out on this, Michael, just give me a second.
Okay.
I'm gonna try to reason this through in my own head, and maybe we can come to a mutual understanding on this.
Right.
Okay. You're gonna help me get a grip on why people feel this way. When it comes to, for example, Mississippi just passed a law saying, "Hey, great, prayer in schools."
Okay.
Okay. Now, when the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law with respect to the establishment of a religion, that means that they cannot show bias towards any one faith, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, the obvious implication from here, then, is that anybody should be able to pray in school.
Right.
So that means that during morning faith, during morning prayer, you may hear Allahu Akbar. You may hear O Goddess. You may hear, "O great horned God of the hell of hell."
Right.
Right? Now,
right.
I'm reasonably certain that the intent of that law in Mississippi is not to get those prayers included, but it's to get our fathers. into schools, and that is blatantly against my interpretation of the Constitution of the United States and the interpretation of a lot of my American friends.
Yep, and I absolutely agree with you on that 100%. You shouldn't be imposing your religion in a way that would then take students who aren't in that faith uncomfortable and make them feel like you're forcing them to do something. I get you. You're right. That's what it was intended for. Okay, let's remember the reason those laws were put in place had to do with the fact that in the case of America, they were trying to make a way to separate from the model that England had, where you had the state church and the state tried to impose their belief system onto the entire population.
That's
when
correct.
A vast majority
the
of the English...
Anglican Church, in the start of the 1600s, you had Cromwell come to power at that time, they were known, the Roundheads. So you had the conflict between the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, and Lutherans in Britain at the time, which is why the Pilgrims left.
Yeah.
Right? Because Puritans.
Yeah,
when they came to America, they wanted to come to a place where they could worship in peace and not be disturbed by the government.
Exactly.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that gets me is a lot of people say that America is founded as a Christian nation.
Which it was.
In the Treaty of Tripoli. And I'm pretty sure you've heard this argument before, Michael.
Yep.
The Treaty of Tripoli, it expressly states, and John Adams stated this, that America is not in any sense a Christian nation.
Right, okay. They had to state that because they didn't want to give the idea that we were somehow this state-authorized religion or state, because, you know, we had to have the freedom of religion. That was the key fundamental thing that they wanted to imply. But what he didn't mean by that statement was that we are not founded upon Christianity itself. I mean, the very Constitution, our laws, they're directly influenced by the Judeo-Christian worldview. That's a fact. I mean, you can't deny that. Anybody who studies U.S. law, you can see that. But what I'm bothered by, and I agreed with everything you said so far as the state imposing or, you know, forcing people who otherwise don't believe in it to take part in something that they don't want to take part in. That's absolutely correct. What the secularists do, though, is they take it another level further, where they say to the point where anyone who steps out and shows some type of a religious act in a public square, and it's always against Christianity. That's one thing I've always noticed. I've always seen them accepting of Muslims, you know, Baha'i, Buddhists, Hindus, whatever. If they want to have a public display of their religious faith in a public square, there's almost no complaints, never. It's always targeted at Christians. I don't know if it's because of the majority or whatever it may be. But they go to the point where they try to make it like we should try to exclude it altogether and then impose the secular atheist worldview on all of us, even though in America they only reflect 12% of the population. That's the part I don't understand. Now, we've allowed the secular atheist view to become the predominant one, even though they're not the majority. And that's the part as a Christian to me irks me, because now we're trying to act like all of a sudden that, number one, there was no Christian influence in the beginning of this country. Number two, that somehow Christianity is a negative thing. That's the thing that even takes me further. Because there's no sane, right-minded human being can sit down, look at the teachings of Christ, and say with a straight face to another human being, this is a negative thing that would have a negative effect on our society. There's no one. No one could do that. Jesus taught the highest level of
ethical
teaching.
It's a Muslim faith to say that either. You can't look
yes,
at the Quran and you can't say that. I mean,
because Muhammad advocated for pedophilia, sexual perversion beyond anything. He insisted on legal prostitution, which they called temporary marriages. Jesus never advocated for anything that could be slightly construed as perverted, twisted, or evil. There's nothing. The man taught nothing more than love your neighbor as yourself, turn the other cheek, be the last, seek to serve others, put others' needs before your own. There's nothing you can nitpick or pick from his teachings that would be even construed as negative. There's nothing. Every other faith you can find things that would lead to one questioning what's this really about. Take the Mormon faith. Joseph Smith advocated for all types of sexual
perversion. But I need to ask this. So I take it then that you've read the Quran.
I have read the Quran. I have many Muslim friends. I've debated Sikhs. I debated rabbis, atheist professors.
And so I'm assuming then that your Muslim friends do then agree that Muhammad advocates pedophilia, as you've indicated?
Absolutely, because it's stated within the very text that they claim to believe. This is not something that I could just say, oh, this is my personal opinion. The man married and had sex with a 9-year-old. Not only that, when his claimed apostles would go out in their military campaigns and take over a city, for example, his men then said, we've captured these women, even though their husbands were still alive among them. They asked Muhammad, is it okay for us to have sex with them, even though it was against their will? And Muhammad said, it's okay because they're in your right hand, meaning they're your possession, therefore it's okay to do so. So let's be clear about what we're talking about. There's a lot of things in the Quran that Muhammad clearly taught, both in the Quran and in the Hadith, that would be a clear violation of our own laws in this country. Where on the flip side, there's nothing that Jesus advocated that would be considered as illegal in our country.
Okay, now are you a New Testament Christian or are you an Old and New Testament Christian?
Okay, when people say Old and New Testament, the Old Testament in itself and in its entirety is not considered the Word of God. What do I mean by that? The Jews called the Old Testament Tanakh, and that's an acronym for three words, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim. Those three words are, the Torah represents the first five books of the Bible, which is considered the inerrant Word of God given to Moses. Then you have the Nevi'im, which is the book of the prophets. This would refer to Isaiah, your Daniels, and whatnot. Those are considered the Word of God. Then you have something called the Ketuvim. Ketuvim refers to the writings. This is the books of poetry and the history.
So you don't believe in the clobber passages from the Pentateuch, and you don't believe in the laws that are set down in Leviticus then?
Okay, the laws in Leviticus have to do with a theocracy that's under a particular, for the Israeli state at the time. And with the events that they were dealing with
in their
neighboring countries.
This is, and a lot of secularists will say this is part of the Bible. Therefore, it's what Christians believe.
Okay, well, that's, again, there's something called hermeneutics where we study the Bible and take things in context, both historically and in the context of the text itself. Anybody can just pull any passage out and take it out of context. That's been done all throughout the history of the Christian church. But anyone who approaches any document with an academic view and look at it and take things in context can understand that certain things could be taken out of, you know, from what it doesn't actually imply.
But the passage,
for example,
is relatively clear.
All right.
If you get tattoos, you die. If you that are unclean, like animals with cloven hooves, you die.
Right.
If you wear mixed clothing, you die. It is acceptable to sell your daughters into slavery.
Okay.
If a man work on the Sabbath, he should be stoned to death.
Okay, so
you see what I mean? These are pretty heinous punishments for that you've already stated doesn't do anything bad.
Right. Again, so when we look at those, you have to ask yourself a very simple question. Number one, when were these laws actually implemented? What time and what area? Like, what was going on at the time that these laws were put in place?
So this is the same
in that culture at that time.
When the Quran was
talking about at least 1,500 years before Christ, all right? At that time, the majority of societies around them were barbaric. There was no state laws. There were no police force. There was nothing. There was nothing to hold society to a certain standard. It's not like today. It's easy for us to see something like that today and think, oh, what was that? But we don't understand the savageness of that time. Back then, God gave those laws because there was one particular one where they had this concept that if you stole something from someone, that person would then go and kill you and your entire family, right? So those laws, God said, would say, instead of doing that, if someone were to stay, kill your oxen, you have to then go and take one of your own and give it to that person. And what God was trying to do is take a society of people that were from a barbaric time and to slowly develop them into a what would be close to a civil society. And he had to shape them and take them from that. Now, what we see is the wisdom of God where he takes humanity, which was in a barbaric state, and slowly over time get them to the state that we're at now. We're a direct byproduct of that evolution of the way men handle their societies. We came from absolute barbarism, right, to a civil society that we have today that are all directly influenced by the very scriptures that atheists try to rail against. And they're easily to take things out of context historically, what was going on at the time and what those things meant. There were many laws in the Torah which referred to sexuality. For example, at that time, it was commonplace for people to have sex with animals, with their direct relatives, mother and father, brother and sister, on and so forth. There's about 30 to 40 laws that directly address that in the Torah. And today we would see that and say, what is it? What is that? Of course, common sense. But it's only common sense because we've been influenced by that. Otherwise, that was common. Like, take the Romans in the Roman Empire back in the during the time of Christ. Homosexuality was absolutely normal. And what I mean by that was men regularly had sex with little boys all the time. It happened. It was considered shameful for your household if your next door neighbor did not have sex with your son. You know what I'm saying? But today we look at and abhor something like that because we've been influenced by the Bible, not because of human enlightenment, which is what atheists try to claim. But that's not a reality.
Can't both happen at the same time?
No, because atheism, what it does is it's almost like a complaint of Christianity. That's basically what it is, of religion in a whole. And we went through it in the 20th century. Like, I'm Ethiopian by origin, and we had a communist country that tried to impose atheism onto the entire society. And communism across the country, across the world, was basically atheists taking their worldview to the umph degree and trying to impose it on society. And what we came to find out was that does not work. Totalitarianism and all that, it doesn't work. But that's what atheism would lead us to. And, I mean, it's easy for an atheist to try to take this high road view in our society today, which is a direct effect from Christianity, and then try to act like all these common sense things that we take for granted are, oh, that's because a byproduct of our, you know, intellectual enlightenment that we went through and all that. That's a bunch of BS.
But if the atheists had their way, we would be in a totalitarian government. Hang on, Mike. I don't know. Again, I'm going to remind you of who I am, okay? And here's who I am. I'm a person of belief in other people's beliefs. And it is possible that good can come from people who aren't Christian and who aren't following Christian beliefs. What made Jesus special, and in my mind, what made him special in my mind, was that he reached out to people. And he even reached out to Mary Magdalene, who was a prostitute, and found that he could find friendship with her and a person that he could commune with. And I know about all the other stuff that people suggest and all that kind of stuff. Again, this is all about belief, and I think all good does not come from Christianity, just as all bad doesn't come from elsewhere. You know,
that's
what I believe. I think, you know, you and I have a very big difference of opinion. I got to be honest with you. We have a big difference
Frank,
of opinion.
Let me make something clear, because I agree with that. Okay, like, say, take Siddhartha Gautama Buddha, the founder of Buddhism, right? There's a lot of things I learned from him there's a lot of good and there's a lot of great ideas that he presented that I respect and that I agree with and I take hold and I learn from. But there's certain things, like he tried to address the issue of suffering, right? And his solution to suffering was one has to remove their desire, their material desire of things, and then that would, if you remove your desire for things, that will then lead you to a state of nirvana that would then take away any suffering in your life. And I'm just like, that's just not reality. None of us can actually do that, especially
not
those of us that have families and children and live lives.
And not those of us that live in a democratic capitalistic society.
Exactly. And so to me, while there's things like, for example, Muhammad taught certain things I agree with. Like he talked about, in certain passages, even though he contradicted himself, he talked about equal rights for women, rightful treatment for slaves, all of us are equal before God. I agree with all of those things. But there's
Can we bring somebody else in who's been waiting patiently to give? You mentioned women and equality for women, so let's give a woman an equal opportunity to make a statement on the program.
Okay.
Colleen, welcome to the program.
Hey, Frank, how you doing? Hello, Cuz.
Hey, Cuz.
Hey, what's new and exciting?
Say hello to Mike.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
Doing good. How you doing, man?
Not doing bad at all.
Did you want to comment on the subject that we're into here that Mike introduced? Religion's the last thing I ever thought I'd be talking about on this show, but I've never say no to anything.
I'm going to not touch this one.
Oh, okay. So then instead you're going to talk about race cars.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
That's Colleen. Colleen's religion. Her religion
That's
is
Colleen's religion.
It's not my religion, it's my passion. But
there
yeah.
you go. It's all the same.
Man,
go
it's
ahead.
Been happening. Racing in Canada or Canadians in racing has been happening for the last few weeks, and it's been really awesome.
Is there a trace of proof in that, or what?
There's a whole lot of proof. Let's start off with, how about the Toronto Indy a couple weeks ago?
Absolutely.
All right. First of all, it was looking like the race was going to have some issues because the flash floods put 3 feet of water on the IndyCar circuit in Toronto the Monday before the weekend.
Event, yep.
Yeah, and I'm going to put a shout-out to my folks at BARC Ontario Centre, the organizers of that event, for doing an awesome job of pulling everything together and making that thing come off on Friday morning. Because they had to do a lot of work after that flooding on Monday.
And congratulations to them, and to know that, and to know that, you know, let's see now, the track is right near Lake Ontario, which would be a low point in our community. And
mm-hmm.
I don't mean that in a political sense.
No, in an elevation sense, you're absolutely,
absolutely.
Right.
It's a low point.
And by the way, those folks are all volunteers.
And good for them.
Yeah. So then you get to the race itself, which has a couple of really interesting things, one of which being the first standing start in modern IndyCar history.
Very cool.
Very, very cool. They had to abort the first one they planned on Saturday, but Saturday night they made a surprise announcement they were going to try it again on Sunday, and it went off on Sunday without a hitch. And then, of course, you have Mr.
Together.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have Mr. Bourdais and the incident with his trophy.
I just missed it. I watched it on every sports center I possibly could.
That was something else, and, you know, he took that
see
really,
look
really
on his
good
face.
Humor.
See the look
oh,
on
the
his
look
face?
On his, oh, it was priceless. Yeah, and I couldn't believe it. I was standing there watching that going, did that thing just fall? And, you know, funny part is the guy that made the trophies actually had a display in the vendor alley at the race, and my photographer for the radio show I normally work for was walking by there on her way, and she said that the guy was actually out front pacing back and forth going, they broke the damn trophy. They broke the trophy. They broke the trophy.
They brought another one soon after, did they not?
Yeah, they did. And they made sure, by the way, that they delivered his third-place trophy on Sunday to him, because I was standing there when they did that, with security in a really nice padded box.
And you know, that was a very interesting weekend where you had a winner for two wins for one driver in the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott
that
Dixon
must have been
pulled
awesome.
Off the double.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Oh, it was incredible. And the other thing which is kind of worth a bit of a laugh is, and it was also interesting, is they brought Robbie Gordon Stadium Truck Series to the track. First time
I've
ever
seen that.
I
saw some of the footage. It looked fantastic.
Oh, that was incredible stuff. They actually put ramps out on the street circuit, and some of these guys were coming off the ramps, and the bottom of their tires were level with the top of the catch fences. Unbelievable. Trying to think. I believe it was Sunday's race, because Paul Tracy was running in that, sponsored by Sportsnet. Sunday's race on the coming to the white flag for the last lap of the Sunday Stadium Truck Race, Tracy misjudged the ramp, got it wrong, went nose first into the wall. He was fine,
mm-hmm.
by the way. But he knocked out the corner worker communications network, and that's not the first time he's done that in Toronto.
Paul.
Oh, yeah. Well, we love him. We love him.
We love our PT.
Yeah. So then in other news that just came up today, just finished, I guess, broadcasting at 10:30, Grand Am Rolex Series running at Indianapolis. AIM Autosport out of Woodbridge took the win and fourth place in the GT class. That's their first win of the season.
Congratulations to them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Ferrari back team.
Hey, who's their driver?
For the 61 car, it's Jeff Siegel and Mad Max Pappas.
Okay.
For the 69 car, it is Emil Asentado and Anthony Lazzaro.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Still had his hand on the wheel.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's nothing like Mad Max Pappas. And then the other news that came out today is that Alex Pagliani has been asked to relinquish his seat for the remainder of the season with Barracuda Racing and IndyCar.
Yeah.
So tags is gone.
Why?
They're trying out a couple of other drivers in order to determine who their second driver will be for their second car for next season is the word.
So Tagliani won't be driving anymore in this circuit?
For the rest of this season. We'll see what happens next season.
So he might come back next season and be the number one car, and then
then
they'll have a number two, right?
That's the theory.
I'm trying to understand.
Oh, no worries. That's the theory, but we don't have anything confirmed on that. However, that opens up an interesting possibility because, as everybody knows, we have a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race happening Labor Day weekend just north of Toronto.
This is true.
And Mr. Tagliani was tipped as one of the drivers that should fill one of the eight available seats for that race. But he was unavailable because he was going to be at the IndyCar race in Baltimore.
Well, so that frees him up then. So that means that he could potentially still nab that last spot.
You got it.
Oh, this is going
to be interesting.
Yeah.
That will be very interesting because Tagliani is a solid top 10 finisher in something like that.
I'm chuckling.
Pauline, it's always a pleasure to hear about the motorsports from you. I hope I'm not cutting you off too soon. What else have you have to offer us for us?
Well, if I can do a little bit of a public service plug, I'm not sure how many people heard about this. The Humane Society out in Paris, Ontario, did a raid on a house and found 83 neglected and abused Yorkie and Westie dogs that they took into custody. 30 of those dogs have wound up in the Humane Society here in Cambridge, where I am. The Humane Society is overwhelmed trying to deal with them all. So they're looking
for temporary homes
for
them. Do you need temporary homes for them?
I think that they're more or less looking for permanent homes for these dogs, but they also need temporary donations because a lot of them are not socialized to deal with humans. They're not housebroken, and they need food. They need blankets. They need towels. They need all kinds of stuff to help these animals out so they can get them to the point where they can be adopted out.
And where can people send some help?
I should imagine that if you contact the Humane Societies in Cambridge and Paris area, that you should be able to find the folks that need the help.
Perfect.
Yeah. And apart from that, I got one more thing for you. For those that are into their dirt sprint car racing, the World of Outlaws is racing Tuesday night at Oshwekan Speedway on the Six Nations Indian Reservation outside of Brantford. And on the Monday night is the Northern Summer Nationals, and some guy named Tony Stewart is showing up to run that race.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Never heard of him. Never heard of him.
No, I never heard. Apparently his nickname is Smoke.
I heard he likes to get dirty.
Well, from what I've seen on the website, tickets for the Summer National with Tony Stewart are running about $25. Tickets for the World of Outlaws are around about $45.
All
perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Colleen, give us a whale out on where you're heard usually. You were referring to your other broadcaster.
Yeah. I am the Canadian correspondent and associate producer for In the Pits Racing Radio, which you can pick up from here in Canada Wednesday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. on inthepitsmedia.com.
There you go. And Colleen, every Friday I look forward to your calls. And and you know what? I just happened to look at Facebook, and I'm going, oh, God, Colleen wants in. Uh-oh. And so I got to you as soon as I could. I loved your remark. We're talking religion now. And you remarked to me, I know, Frank. I know.
Well, I don't manage to listen in every single Friday, but I do try.
From time to time.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I always got to say hi to the cousin, too.
There
of
you
course.
Go. Listen, thank you for tuning in. We're going to take a short break and, remind us again of the special event that people should be a part of. Colleen, before you go.
Oh, the World of Outlaws race.
Yes.
Yes, this Tuesday night, July 30th, at Oshwekan Speedway out on the Six Nations Indian Reservation, not far from Brantford. This is one of five appearances that the World of Outlaws make in Canada. They are the most prevalent professional international series to come to Canada, and it is a phenomenal show. Be prepared to get dirty and make sure you bring earplugs.
There you go. Thank you, Colleen.
All right, you guys take care and have a great night.
Thank you very much. All right, Colleen always comes in, and of course she is Aaron William Freelance, because she is.
She my cousin.
All right, we're going to take, you know what, I can't even do it. I'll see if I can, I got to, here. Okay, Mike, remind the folks before we were rudely interrupted by Colleen what we were talking about. And if they're interested, they can call 714-242-5250. We're talking religion. We're talking family killer, friend killer. We're talking the subject that destroys relationships on a regular basis.
It's the friends list cleaner.
There it is. You got that right. I hope you don't mind me saying that, buddy.
No, that's fine. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, no, so, you know, at the end of the day, if I can, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, just that Colleen has a limited window to do her piece. She comes on every couple of weeks and informs us on the status of motorsports, and of course, with Indy going by, I wanted to make sure that I got her in. You know, a lot of times when it comes to discussing religion, people take it, when I say this, I hope I don't make enemies by saying this, they take it too seriously. Keep in mind that we live in a society where we have a freedom of choice, we have freedom of religion, and we have the freedom to practice our religion in a way that we wish to practice it. But here's the part that I agree with Mike, and some people aren't going to like me saying this. But at the end of the day, we have a society that we have developed. Not necessarily. I don't 100% agree with Mike, but I do 90% agree with Mike that a lot of it is Christian-based. And the principles of democracy as we live it here in Canada and in the United States, for that matter, is based on the fact that Christians who were practicing left Europe to come to Canada and the United States to practice their beliefs more freely. And in doing so, they created a system of justice, a system of law, a system of community that they felt important. And since then, we've invited other communities that think differently. And to Mike's point, sometimes I wonder, that do we bend over backwards to accommodate new people and give up on our original ideas that have made us a country to be proud of? I hope I'm not overstating what you were stating, Mike, but I think that's to sum up in some way what you were saying before I cut you off.
Yes, sir, that's it.
You know, and I agree with you, Mike, in that regard. And I do agree that in Christianity there is good. And yes, there is, you know, interpretation of bad. But still, the good cannot be ignored just because there's bad that exists. What we can do as people is take what we believe and make it more community-friendly. And if it isn't community-friendly, why should we accept it, is the question that Mike is raising. And I agree with him wholeheartedly. Just because you're a religion doesn't mean you have a right to exist within our community. Because there are some beliefs, and this is where, Aaron, you can come in and start kicking me in the teeth, that sometimes don't give a damn about people's rights or women's rights. Or, you know what I'm saying, Aaron?
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know, and I don't want to sound like a can kicker, but, you know, I'll keep kicking this can down the road, and the can that I'll be kicking is the one about, you know, equality for all of us. I have four daughters. I want women to be treated equally for selfish reasons. I want Aaron because Aaron is not of white extraction. He is of other extractions, combinations of such extractions, as is Mike, as I am. While I am sort of European white, I'm not total European white because I'm of the olive skin variation. So, you know, it takes all kinds to make a wonderful community, and I'm grateful to know people like Mike and Aaron, and I'm grateful to hear your opinion. So, Mike, I interrupted you. If you'd like to continue and finish that train of thought that you were in the midst of expressing, please continue at this point.
Firstly, I just want to say to both of you, I just want to apologize if I said anything to maybe insult you or if I ain't doing it any way. That's not my intention. I'm not trying to, like, cause some stress,
I know that. I can't speak for Aaron, but I know that.
No, I'm not offended at all.
No, so, I mean, the only reason I get, like, worked up is here in America especially, and I have a lot of atheist friends and in my family and just in our societies and on my university campus, and what they try to do is they try to make it seem like the reality is there is no God. The rest of us are playing imagination, and they're just sort of putting up with us, and eventually we need to grow up and get out of that. And that's the part that just irks me, because they make it seem like there's no evidence and there's no case to be made for God. And I think there is. It's just that the people that we have in position and with platforms are influencing the evidence with their interpretations and influencing our society to believe in certain things, which are just their particular biases and not the actual reality of the actual facts. And that's the part that just bothers me.
May I support you? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to say, may I support you in what you're saying?
Yes.
I have four daughters. Each time they were born, I asked myself a very important question. And that question was, how can you not believe there's a God? And
yeah,
I mean that sincerely. I'm not sitting here. You know, I looked at my children and I look at life in general, and I know in my heart there's a bigger and better being that created all this and helped this to happen. No, not aliens. But people.
Is a God. He's got a hell of a sense of humor, Frank. Who puts a playground between two sewers?
Well,
that's funny.
You ever wonder if you want some mulligan on things like elbow skin?
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, really?
Aaron, now you're being just funny.
Yeah,
you know what, Aaron?
You're
right. No. I get what you're saying, and I hope Mike does too. He's just teasing now. Aaron likes to do this. Aaron you haven't gotten to know Aaron. Aaron is a good buddy of mine, and we've gotten to know each other on the air, and I am very proud to have him as a partner on my show on Fridays. And I have nothing to say bad about Aaron other than his taste in alcohol, and his taste in animals. I think he could do better. I think he should go with animals that are more on the darker side of color and hair, fur.
Should. A white dog was a bad idea.
It was a totally bad idea. I'm kidding here, okay? At the end of the day, I love my neighbor, I love my friends, and I love people in general. And, Mike, the fact that what I do with football is just part of what makes me who I am. And here's who I am. I'm a guy who believes in being all-inclusive. I'm like a Cuba getaway. I don't believe in favoritism. I don't believe in racism. I don't believe in people who think that it's important that they do better than anyone else. And by that I mean in our interrelationship. In other words, Mike, I'm the host of this show, but I hope everybody understands that, and when I say this, they'll believe me when I say this. I give every viewer, listener, an opportunity to give their opinion, and I'll have them on longer than a lot of people suggest I should. But that's because I believe that I respect everybody else's opinion. And for me to be a broader and better person, it takes me listening to people like Mike and Aaron and Colleen and John Granger and Chris Shivcharin and anyone else. It's just that's the way it is. That's what makes us all better people, is when we talk to each other and try to understand each other. So, yeah, you're right, Mike. You're 100% right that sometimes atheists are people who don't believe in God, who are promoting something they believe in, but say that we shouldn't believe in what we believe in. And that's not right. Just because, and you're 100% right. And you know what? The true Christian behavior and attitude is the greatest gift that we can give to the world. Unfortunately, we did divert away from the intention that Jesus gave us. We did have, like you mentioned, the Crusades and other, other failed concepts within the Christian religion. But, you know, if we were perfect, we wouldn't make any mistakes. If we wouldn't make any mistakes, we wouldn't be talking about God. We would be God.
Yep.
Your ball, Mike.
Okay, I just want to make two quick points because I'm sure some of the listeners are probably saying things like, questioning the veracity of the Bible. So I just want to make a quick statement. The New Testament Gospels that we have today, a lot of people think they were written 300 or 400 years after the time of Jesus. I just want to make sure that's cleared up. They're based on over 5,260 Greek manuscripts or pieces of manuscript that are dated all the way back to 115 A.D. Secondly, we have a writing of one of the church fathers in the year 95 A.D. where he quotes Matthew, Mark, and Luke, which lets us know that they were written within the first century. Secondly, the other point I want to make is people think, well, there's no evidence for God, and I just want to throw one big piece of evidence out there. The genetic information that we've discovered in the last 10 years due to our advancements in nanotechnologies have revealed to us that your DNA code is like a computer program, and within it, it has all these systems that operate, that maintain our bodies and all this, you know, create us and build us and all that, and that we've learned that the process of natural selection, which Darwin thought was a driving force for evolution, reduces the amount of information in a gene pool, not increase it. Therefore, that leaves us with two big dilemmas. Number one, where is the source of all this information in the first place? Secondly, where is the new information that comes in that allows for the quote-unquote mutations that lead for evolution to actually take place? Because if natural selection isn't the means in which that can happen, then what is? So I just wanted to put that out there, and there's a lot of other stuff we get into, but I know we're short on time. So I just want to thank you, Frank, and to Aaron, sorry if I say anything that rubs you the wrong
way. No, don't need, Mike. Here's my problem. Mike?
Yep.
Mike, you're still there. Okay. Here's my problem with you. You want to know my problem with you? You need not apologize for your beliefs, all right? If you're ever on a program that I'm doing, you don't apologize for what you believe. You have never said anything that's intentionally or interpreted as an intentional hurtful comment. And as long as you don't do that, what you have to say is respected by me, and I know Aaron as well. You know, all Aaron and I expect, and I'll speak for Aaron temporarily, and then he can either agree or disagree with what I'm saying, because this is what I believe in. I respect anybody's opinion about anything. I like to give it a chance to roll around in my little pea brain to see how it fits. I won't necessarily agree right away. I won't necessarily disagree right away. But I will give it some sincere thought, and once I've given it that thought, I will arrive at a conclusion and or a comment. Aaron, your turn.
I operate exactly the same way. It's got to rattle around for a bit, see if it fits into any of the slots that are up there, and if it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We move on.
And we talk about it if it doesn't. And we talk about it if it does. That's the way the Friday Night Free-for-All works. It's just about wanting to hear what other people have to say. We're down to our last 90 seconds. Mike from Minnesota has joined us. Mike obviously was bored with the game today between Calgary and Edmonton, which Calgary won. They didn't win it handily, but they did win it well enough to make Edmonton go away again as not a victor. And, of course, my buddy Aaron Freeland, William Freeland, who joined us again after 2 weeks hiatus, doing his thing, running his obstacle course and enjoying his 2 weeks away, and also going to Rochester to play his lacrosse match, which was the Fan Cup. And, of course, all proceeds go to charity, which I applaud Aaron and the rest of the lacrosse fans, including, I assume, Jarrett. Oh, no, wait a minute. Jarrett didn't make it this year, did he, Aaron?
Jarrett was unfortunately unable to attend. I believe
Jarrett.
There was a certain matter that involved a Wrath of God type event.
Wasn't it a concert? Okay. Wasn't it a concert that excluded him?
No. Rush was actually on a Thursday.
Oh, okay. Well,
if I recall correctly. I mean, I like Rush. I just don't like
that
Rush $140 worth.
And speaking of Rush, they played a concert in Calgary for charity in Calgary for the people who were, flood. Oh, got to go. Got 10 seconds. Thank you for tuning in to Candid Frank Live. This was Friday Free for All. We're back again on Monday for our Argo show, Wednesday our national show, and once again in 1 week, Free for All. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, guys, that was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Mike.
Yes, Mike. Thank you.